Hello. Hi, everyone. Good evening. I think we knew most of you, except for maybe two. Have you been to EDT before?
I've been twice.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. I've been for a few times or first time?
This is my second
time. Okay. Okay, we got a phone call from Coco just 5 minutes before 6:30 your time. We thought we'll try our best to share about the topics that Coco already organized for Marble Township, Happiness and Let It Go. So we'll try our best to keep to that topic. But also, today will be quite a casual evening. Feel free to ask any questions at any time, and maybe we'll have some discussion as well towards the end. Okay? So.
Oh, so that's my cue to come in. I don't know if Coco has introduced, but I guess we don't really need much of an introduction. We know most people here anyways. So as you all know, this is a very, very, very last minute, in fact, zero preparation. So I must admit, these are all my recycled notes from previous talks in the past. And when we heard about the topic, initially, well, I was like, oh, how am I going to talk about this?
Happiness.
Oh, there's no topic. Oh, great! Even better! Oh, great. Then we can all go home then. So I think the initial topic was, happiness and letting go, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, I don't know what Venerable Chang Shui had in mind, but sort of reading the description, it sounded like the way to go about happiness really is to try and identify, happiness, and then what are the causes, and then what are the ways to achieve that kind of happiness. So, but we have to just share our own version from our understanding. And I must say that we are not monastics. We are not monks or nuns, so we'll do our best to share what we have learned, accumulated from scriptures, from other talks that we have learned, and do our best with sharing this at all.
Begin with that is to ask you some questions. Because I think it's important every time we go for a Dharma talks or some practice, it's important for us to reflect ourselves, reflect it, because otherwise it won't be any use by just listening one way. So it's more useful when we are able to reflect it on our own, and probably whatever you say to yourself, you may remember that better than whatever we will say tonight. Yeah. So the question is, what is happiness to you? Anyone like to share about that? What is happiness? What comes to your mind when you think of happiness?
You're satisfied with whatever you have.
Okay, you're feeling contentment, satisfied with what you have. Anyone else?
Something.
Okay, Michelle?
Seeing other people happy as well, or you being able to help others so you help others solve their problems and then they are happy.
Okay, happy and see others being happy because we are able to help them. Okay. Anyone else?
I just want to say something that makes you smile.
Something that makes you smile, you feel happy. Smile and happy, of course. Anyone else?
Being free from sort of any physical or mental suffering.
Wow, well, that's a very high level of happiness. Being free from all that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other input?
Sleeping well.
Yes, we'll be able to sleep well. For some people, that is a type of happiness.
Sounds like you don't sleep well.
Yeah.
Any more? Pass, you look like you have something to say.
They're all very wholesome things.
Or for me, it used to be getting what you want.
Getting what you want, yep. And now?
Used to be.
Oh, used to be, yeah.
Okay. What is it now?
Very good. People have said very wholesome things already, so.
It's not about comparison here. Because we all associate the word happiness differently. And at different point in time in our life, that association changes as well. Maybe when you're young, a happiness is getting a piece of chocolate. Yeah. But now if you say get a piece of chocolate, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Then depends on the kind of chocolate.
Okay. So knowing the happiness that you have, how do you let it go? For what you have mentioned just now. Do you have a way of letting go? If you didn't get a smile back?
Impermanence.
Oh, you think of impermanence? Okay. Any other? If you get... Oh yeah, not enough sleep, I cannot comment on that.
Kind of just treasuring the moment as it is, and then just being grateful for that moment.
Okay, grateful for that moment and treasure. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? For what you have said just now, do you have... Letting go, how do you do that, Michelle? If someone don't feel being helped?
You try your best.
Okay, you try your best. So it looks like the talk has finished. Happiness and letting go. Clary?
Got two.
Okay. Yeah.
We're done.
I give the cue again. Okay.
So I think we need to, from a bit of reading, you know, I think it's quite important to try and understand what happiness is and what kind of things brings happiness to us, which some of you have already touched on. But I think most of the things essentially come down to very fundamental things, isn't it? Like, everyone wants to be healthy, everyone wants to be, you know, sleep well, have money, good grades, you know, you're still in uni, so, you know, exams, free from uni debts. Uni fees, I heard, are quite high these days, but that's another story. But you know, most of you have, almost everyone has been to Dharma talks, right? Mm. Yeah, and no one's the first time here, right? Mm. Yeah. Okay. So you know, you would have heard of a lot of speakers talk about things like, you know, to be happy, you need to let go, you need to, you know, practice your precepts very well, you need to develop your meditation very well, and also, you know, you need to let go of your attachment, be free from your attachment to worldly things, right? Is this a surprise? No, right? Okay, this shows that you have all attended Dharma talk. Very good. But I think it's also quite important to understand our role in where we are in this Dharma or this Buddhist teaching journey. Because clearly, you and I, we still have hair, we don't wear robes. We go about working, studying, we handle money, we watch TV, we have phones, we go online, we go to Facebook, or is Facebook outdated now? I don't know. So we are not detached from these things yet, right? I mean, be honest to yourself, we are clearly not monks or nuns. But a lot of times, the conflict comes when we are trying to do things that monks and nuns are doing. Not saying that what they're doing is wrong, but then we have to understand what position we're in and what sort of things that, you know, we can do and what things that we can't do. All right? So this is just to put a little bit of perspective. Because you'll find that I'll tell you a Zen story that I read recently. So there's this person who was complaining that, you know, he was telling a Zen master, a Buddhist master, is like, oh, you know, I've done a lot of chanting, I've been doing a lot of good deeds, you know, I've been donating a lot of money. Oh, Master, why is my life not any better? And then the Master says, okay, I tell you what, I'll send $500 to you. Then the person was like, no, Master, I did not take your money. I said, no, it's okay, because I want you to do a task for me. I said, okay, yeah, sure, what is it? With this $500, I want you to buy me a car. Then he's like, huh? Master, $500 cannot buy you a car. I said, oh yeah, you are so smart. You know $500 cannot buy you a car. So the moral of the story is that we often want to put in minimal effort and have maximum gain. Yeah? So compare ourselves to the monks and nuns that we see. How many, not say hours, how many minutes a day do you spend practicing meditation? Okay, just now 10 minutes, right? At least, right? 10, 15 minutes. Oh. So typically, the monastics, when they wake up in the morning at 5 or 5:30, I mean, we wake up at what? If you have holidays, 10? So their day begins a lot earlier than us. And then after they freshen themselves, what do? They start their morning practice, which may be chanting or maybe meditation or both. And most of you would have attended some retreats. And just tell me, if you winter retreats at Sonatram Forest Monastery or the summer retreats at either Wat Pa Budarang Si or in Hua Chap Monastery, how long do you spend time meditating in the morning sessions?
1 hour.
About an hour?
Mm.
Yeah. So this is special for you. During retreat, meditate at least 1 hour in the morning. But after retreat, 5 minutes, more than enough. But bottom itchy, back itchy, you know. So meditation is just one practice. But you know, during retreats, you're like constantly being reminded, be mindful of the way you eat, the way you talk, the way you walk. Be mindful of every breath, every step you take. And once you leave the monastery, what did I do? I can't really remember where I put my phone. Oh, man, I lost my phone like 10 times today already. So your mindfulness is gone. So the time that we actually spend practicing, cultivating ourselves, is minuscule compared to what monastics are doing, right? So again, we want minimal effort, but we expect maximum outcome. So then there is this clash, right? And that's why there's a lot of tension in ourselves. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive to develop ourselves, but I'm saying that it's important to understand what position you're in order to appreciate what kinds of happiness is in a way expected or not expected. You know what I'm saying? Am I making sense? Or have I lost everyone already? Silence. So,
okay.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Because of all the teachings that the Buddha has given, most of the recorded scriptures are what the Buddha addressed to monastics. There are some teachings that's recorded that's addressed to lay people. And you find that somehow or other, most of them are in the Anguttara Nikayas or the numerical discourses. But anyways, that aside, what I'm saying is what the Buddha's instructions for the monastics and the lay people can differ quite a bit. Okay? Let me try and find my notes now. So, in addressing lay people, right, the Buddha mentioned that there are four kinds of happiness, which is ownership, enjoyment, freedom from debt, and blamelessness, which is morality. Yeah. So out of these four things that he mentioned, three of them relate to wealth. So, you know, this is a bit shocking when I first read it, because all along it's like, you know, you have to stay away from you know, you have to, don't be attached to your possessions, your material things, your money, you know, don't be attached. That's how you free yourself. It's true, but are we ready for that? I think we have to be honest to ourselves. Are we ready for that? Because if we're not, then these instructions kind of say, yeah, you know what, for the lay person, these kinds of happiness really relate to our possessions, our ownership, enjoyment, freedom from debt, and blamelessness. Of course, there's also this morality. Okay. So, can you continue?
I guess one of the teaching that Buddha gave to lay people, the most common one, what is that? Anyone know? The very common one for lay people. Buddha said, for lay people, do this. Yeah.
Five precepts.
So five precepts is morality, one of the things that Mingde mentioned just now. And often there are like five precepts. I guess most of you know what are the five precepts. Yeah? No? Okay, we have a friend who don't know. Then maybe the rest who know can tell our friend here. First precept?
Don't kill.
Yeah, no. Avoid killing. Second precept? Avoid stealing. Third precept? Avoid sexual misconduct. Fourth precept? Avoid lying. The last precept? Avoid intoxication. So, five precepts. Maybe volunteer to write it? Okay, I'll write that for some of our friends.
Here.
So, this is. Avoid. Now, there are some translations saying no, but we're looking at avoid. And we'll talk about that later.
While she's writing, I'll fill in the silence. I just want to read out this section on the sutta that I've actually researched before. It's from the numerical discourse, and it's in the section of the, because it's numerical, it goes by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's like, you know, the Buddha said there are four precepts, there are five things, and so on and so forth. This is two. So the Buddha mentioned that he addressed the monks and he said, bhikkhus, there are these two kinds of happiness. What two? The happiness of a lay person and the happiness of one who has gone forth into homelessness, which is renounced and to become monks and nuns. These are the two kinds of happiness. Of these two kinds of happiness, the happiness of one who has gone forth is foremost. Okay? And then again, there are these two kinds of happiness. What two? Sensual happiness and happiness of renunciation. Now, these are the two kinds of happiness. Of these two kinds, the happiness of renunciation is foremost. There's a few things that I'll read out, but I'll just shorten because it's repetition in terms of the sentence structure. So then there are another, okay, there is happiness with taints and happiness without taints, meaning like it's stained or sort of not completely wholesome, okay. And then of these two, the happiness without taints is foremost. So like wholesome, clean, clear types of happiness. And then there is worldly happiness and spiritual happiness, of which spiritual happiness is foremost. And there are pleasurable happiness and the happiness of equanimity. Again, the happiness of equanimity is foremost. So I think it's quite obvious that the Buddha, when addressing the monks, that these, the things that he said, do, are definitely things that are geared towards practice and being free from suffering, like once and for all. Okay, but I think the important thing also is that the Buddha did not deny happiness. Okay, so there is happiness, because I think one of the common things that after I guess depending on what background you're from or whether you have or haven't heard of Buddhism before, sometimes you find that, you know, some Buddhist practitioners, they make themselves very miserable. It's like, oh, I cannot be happy, otherwise I'll be very attached. Like, no, that's not the point. There is happiness, and it is a fact. It's just like there is air, you breathe in air, it's just as simple as that. It's a fact. There is happiness. There is no need to deny it. There is no need to, I suppose, go overboard and get attached to it. It's happiness. Accept that there is happiness. Okay? Because importantly, he also didn't say particularly to pursue, to go crazy and pursue happiness in terms of like ignoring everything and just go for your happiness, which is, so this is where the middle path often comes in. Yeah? So once again, you know, the Buddha's instructions to the monastics and the lay people can have quite different aims. But importantly also is to understand that of the central pleasures, they also arise and fall due to causes and conditions. Hence, they're impermanent, not long-lasting. And this sort of understanding is for those who are ready. So again, going back to sort of basic things that we can do to achieve happiness is once again the precepts. Sorry.
Precepts. Okay. I guess for precepts, because sometimes people may think, oh, can I just do two and not do the other three? Will I be fine? Because I just don't want to uphold it. But honestly, when we look at precepts, it's actually, most of them are the basic humanity, if you use that word, humanity, like a human ethics. It, whether you're Buddhist or not, whoever you are, as long as you are human, I think commonly the whole world will agree on about these five things, right? To achieve a harmony, harmony society, these are the things to avoid. And sometimes what happens is when people uphold it, they feel like, oh, I'm so restricted. Can I move here or can I not move here? Oh no, I'm going to break that. It's actually, when if we can come out of that and look at it from a different perspective, the precepts is actually becomes our protection. Imagine if you don't steal at all. Do we carry worries at night or any time? Yeah. Do we carry fear? If we don't tell lies or sometimes make things exaggerate that later on we feel oops, then do we have those little moment of guilt that come in? If we don't do that, it actually becomes our protection, the happiness that comes because we just simply don't do any of that. Now there's a lot of discussion around the last one, intoxication, especially on alcohol, right? Some say, yeah, a little bit is fine as long as I'm not drunk. So there's avoid intoxication. It's coming back to how we understand it. I'm not here to say yes or no because you decide for yourself. But also to understand when Buddha say that the basic five precepts for lay people, what is his intention to let us know about this, because avoid intoxication doesn't just refer to alcohol, but it also telling us about things that will confuse our mind or things that will make our mind not clear. So whatever it is, some people may be addicted to coffee, I don't know, then that may be something that they rely on. So it's back to finding that middle path there. Understand that if things that will confuse our mind, or even have people who value a clarity of mind, even a certain percentage, they don't allow that. People who not valuing so much, maybe then there will be a different preference there. So understand why there's the five precepts. That brings back to the one of the one kind of the happiness, one of the four that Mingda mentioned just now, the blamelessness in terms of morality. Without going into any of this, then we may be able to, you know, live a life that is without blame, and we can be so free without too much worry. often it's because we try to challenge what if a little bit, and then we carry that guilt or worries. It ties, it comes together.
Any questions so far? Ah, yes.
Yeah, going back to that happiness, the four happiness, the first one you mentioned just now was happiness from ownership.
Yes.
So what kind of happiness to, understand?
Yeah. So we'll move on into that. But then I suppose just to clarify anything regarding the precepts and the way it sort of brings about your happiness. Yes.
Can I ask about the happiness without taint?
Oh yeah, I think in regards to
examples,
I suppose it could be, I think it's mainly just things that, you know, happiness without any, you know, it's a genuine type of happiness without any ill intention or any sort of greed, hatred or delusion in it. I guess things are like, you know, you, whether you donate $20 because you genuinely want to help, or is it because someone's watching $20? Yeah, I'm very kind-hearted, thank you very much, kind of. You know what I mean, those kind of... whether there's any sense of greed, hatred or delusion in that. Yeah, I think. Yeah. So back to the question on ownership. So it's interesting, right? Because the Buddha often tells you to renounce and to, you know, not get attached, and, you know, worldly possessions are a sense of a source of attachment and things like that. But then in the instructions for, well, not instructions, but in the guide to happiness for lay people, it's actually ownership. So I'm like, whoa, what a very interesting. It's not, when I first came across this book and this sutta, I was very surprised, because it's something that I haven't quite heard of before in all the talks. Having said so, most talks are given by monks or nuns, yeah, or people sort of reading from suttas and things. Anyways, coming back to this, it's like, just imagine, right, if you have no ownership, you can be quite insecure. For example, if you, just very basic things, if you don't own your clothes, for example, you don't even know whether you can rent, borrow, beg for clothes to, you know, just get dressed appropriately to walk out of your place. Or even say in times of cold weather or hot weather or things like that, if you don't own basic things, like these are sort of yours that you're, you know, easily entitled to have and things like that. Just winter is just past now, but if you don't own basic warm clothing, you'll be freezing, won't you?
Mm.
Like very, very basic things, but ownership of them.
These four kinds of happiness is actually a, in the sutta that, if I'm not mistaken, is the sutta that Buddha gave to Ananta Pindika. If most of you know, Ananta Pindika is the most wealthiest man that donated the first Buddhist monastery, Jetavana, to the Buddha. So he was a... Now, story time.
Go ahead.
So he was a very wealthy man during the Buddha's time. And he heard of from his cousin that Buddha is coming to his cousin's place. So when he visited his cousin, he was so happy that he's going to meet, he wanted to meet the Buddha, because he, just hearing the word Buddha is already interests him. So, but every time when he went to his cousin's place, everyone will welcome him and do everything for him. But this time, everyone was so busy running around. They said, we are going to prepare food for Buddha, and everyone is running around doing everything for the Buddha. So for him, he heard of that and he said that, can I meet the Buddha now? And the cousin said, no, not yet. Buddha hasn't arrived yet. You've got to wait till tomorrow morning. He said, I can't wait till tomorrow morning. So he was very anxious and really want to meet the Buddha as soon as possible. So in the next morning, before the dawn, he actually went outside of the Buddha's hut and then was waiting there, hoping to be the first one to meet the Buddha. So then Buddha sitting in his hut, knowing that Ananta Pindika is actually just outside. So that's when he called upon Ananta Pindika to come in, we'll have a word. So that's when the Buddha gave this sutta, and Ananta Bindika understand that, and he suggests to offer the Buddha the first Buddhist, the biggest Buddhist monastery, Jetavana. How he offered it, the story is quite interesting, because he go around to look for a nice piece of land to hopefully to buy it and build a monastery for the Buddha. And yes, that's right. So, but at that time, those monastery is not what we see today, like big and high rise building. It's actually very simple hut, simple areas, simple space for the monks and nuns to stay and the Buddha to give teaching. So he saw this big piece of land and he was like, wow, I'm going to get this for Buddha. But this land belongs to a prince called Prince Jetta. So he then went to Prince Jetta saying that, I'd like to offer this piece of land to the Buddha. It's so nice and so peaceful here. But Prince Jetta, probably with a bit of jealousy, he feel like, oh, I don't want to make it so easy for Ananda Bindika. I'm going to make it hard for him. So he requested Ananda Bindika, if you can fill this whole big piece of land with gold coins, whichever area that you can cover, I'll sell you those areas. So for Ananda Bindika, without second thought, yes, he was wealthy, but to cover a big piece of land with gold coin, that still take his whole wealth. So he said, yes, it's fine. And he quickly went off and then start asking his helpers to put out all the coins. Prince Jetta, seeing that, he was quite shocking that the determination that Ananda Bindika had to give. So he said, it's okay, Ananda Bindika, you don't need to go further. The rest of the not covered land, I'll give it to you. So that's how then the name Jetavana came about. So even though, yes, Prince Jetta was a bit making it hard, a hard time for Ananda Bindika, but later on he still think that we'll go with that name, Jetavana. So that's when Buddha gave Ananda Bindika these four kinds of happiness that makes him, I think in the sutta say, at the Sotapanna, like the first stage of enlightenment. So Sotapanna, the first ownership is talking about not so much on owning things, but how we get the ownership. Is that through acquire the wealth through, you know, proper means? How did we get the item? If it is from stealing, then we wouldn't be.
No.
Then we won't be blameless. Yeah. So it's really looking into the ownership. How did we get it? Is that through proper means? Did we acquire the wealth by energetic striving, like striving for it? Then what else?
It says here in the sutta, also amassed by strength of arms, by sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained. Ta-da!
Then that's ownership.
but it means that you did it through your own effort,
that's
your
right.
rightful efforts.
Yeah.
Not like effort on how you plan on how to steal and then perfectly carry it out. No, 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 no. Like your own right efforts, that is blameless through your own hard work.
Mm.
You know, whatever rightful occupation it is. Mm. Yeah. No stealing, No, 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 no. So the other types of happiness, really, it sort of follows on from there, really. The happiness of enjoyment is you enjoy the wealth as you earned it rightfully. The happiness of freedom from debt. So you don't own anyone, you don't own anyone, anything, and whether it's large or small. Again, you're not worried that someone comes knocking on the door and like, hey, you owe me, you know, that how much from 10 years ago, compound interest. It's no longer $10, then you are all sweat. If only that time I pay him back his 10 cents, now no more problems. You know, things like that. Snowball effects. Okay? But I guess the other thing also is to... I think those are the most basic things I can share with you regarding happiness, especially from a lay person's perspective. But then don't forget to practice in a way that which leads to blamelessness as well. Essentially, it's outlined in your Eightfold Path, really, which is?
Eightfold Path? Oh, wow. Which one? The thing. Okay, right understanding, right view. First one.
Right intention.
Right intention, and sometimes say it's right thought. Right speech. Right action. Right livelihood.
Yeah. Right effort.
Effort.
Concentration.
Okay.
Concentration.
Okay. Carry on. Yeah, so again, this is from my notes from when I did research. So essentially, you know, especially in terms of accumulating what you have, the right means is, it's pretty straightforward, but it's basically a no harm policy, really. You avoid weapons, dealing with weapons, dealing with human beings, intoxicants and poisons. You know, pretty straightforward.
Sorry, Minda.
Huh?
While Susan is writing again,
huh?
Can I clarify the four types of happiness?
Yeah, yeah.
So, ownership.
Ownership.
Enjoyment.
Enjoyment, yep.
Blamelessness and without that.
Freedom from debt.
Freedom from debt. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of enjoyment, so what you said previously was that enjoying your wealth as well, right? So what I was wondering if this applies mainly to like wealth as in like material things, or what about enjoyment from things like company or friends and family, like enjoyment from doing what you like? Is that included as well, or is this more towards like a...
Very good question. I think I don't know, it's a short answer, but when I was reading this sutta, I think it's more talking about wealth per se. Yeah, it's more targeted towards this. But you know, those would be of course important as well for our happiness. I think I read it somewhere as well, but I just can't quite remember where I read it. I'm sorry. This is what happens when it's a bit last minute and you're reading notes from like 4 years ago.
I thought enjoyment was about the sensual pleasures.
Yeah, it's...
Pali was a kamasuka.
Yeah. No, I mean, what I meant was, when I was reading about this particular sutta, I think this particular sutta was more talking about wealth per se. But I take that, you know, what you said is it's included as well. Where is it? I can't find it. Oh, that's fine. Oh, sorry. Not directly, but related is there's the usefulness of the wealth that you've accumulated, and there are five things, which is in this Adiya Sutta. So the first thing is pleasure and satisfaction for your parents, your partner, for children, and those who depend on you. The usefulness of your wealth. The second thing is pleasure and satisfaction for friends and associates. The third thing is to ward off calamities from fire, flood, government, thieves. Thieves or hateful heirs, and to safeguard yourself as well. So that's the third thing. I think the government in respect is sort of, you know, in those days it's whatever your king dictates, right? Like if you have a really horrible king that says I want to tax everyone 90%, you pay your tax of 90% or you get thrown out of their respective country, right? So it's, you have to take things in perspective of when they were said. Sorry. And the fourth usefulness of your wealth is offerings to relatives, guests, those who have passed on, kings and devas as well. So this is in the sutta. And the fifth usefulness of your wealth is offerings that result in happiness, including to the virtuous and followers of holy life, which essentially I think it refers to the monks and nuns and those who are practicing along the...
Those developing.
They said holy life. So really anyone who's, I guess, more so Buddhist teachings, but in those day and age, it's also those Brahmins and whoever who are actively pursuing a spiritual path. Mm. Yeah. So does that sort of touch on your question? It's not directly, but it's sort of through the usefulness of your wealth that you've accumulated. Because I think it makes a lot of sense as well, because it's your own wealth that you've accumulated. You use them as you see fit, and you know, it's not like you borrow this huge amount of money to spend on your family and friends and whatnot. Then in the end, you still have the burden to pay back with or without compound interest. So you know what I mean? So these things are genuinely... I just reading this, right, I was very surprised that the advice that the Buddha gave 2,600 years ago, right, is still very valid today. It's like these things just don't change, right? It's just like... It's like almost like the universal truth. It's like you own someone money, you have to pay them back. Even if the person may now be like banks and whatnot, but... You know, you borrowed from, you have to return. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, what were we talking about? Oh, Eightfold Path. Yeah, so anyways, I think more so in relating to a lay person's wealth is particularly your livelihood. But these would apply throughout every person's life, whether you are a monk or not, or monk, nun, lay person or not, really. Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, if you accumulate your wealth and you're living through harming other people or beings, somehow this will eventually come back to you. I suppose maybe more prominent is back in the day, you know, dealing with like slave trade or things like that. I mean, easier for us to say now in our times where we know slavery is really just not good, but you know, back in the day, really, you're handling another person who has, you know, emotions, feelings, and these things. You just, it's. I mean, even then, the Buddha was already saying to avoid dealing with your trait in humans, human beings. So I think that's, again, wow, very wise. 2,600 years ago, he was already seeing these things that we are still talking about today. Yeah. Which is one of the beauty of it. It's there's a when you recite the Pali, what's it, salutations, whatever it is. It's, you know, the Unibas chanting sheet that under the Dharma section. There's a line called Ehi Pasiko, which is come and see for yourself, and then Akaliko, which is I think true. It's like true time, so timeless, 2,600 years ago. And I think as long as we're still human beings, same thing still apply. I don't know about others because I'm not them. I can only tell you as coming from a human being.
Mm. And the interesting part about Buddha's teaching is, if you look at it, this part talk about morality. Four kinds of happiness, the blamelessness is referring to morality. And the five precepts is everything is about morality. So it's interesting how most of the teaching, they all link together. It's just because it's presented to different people, and the Buddha reorganized that to suit whoever listening to him. But it still come together in terms of covering morality and the wisdom part of this. So you can find that in across all the Buddha's sutra or scripture. Wisdom is always there. It's just the context of morality sometimes is modified and it gives in a bit of different name or different context.
So in terms of livelihood, right, the Buddha also add on that in not harming others, but also being kind to workers. Very important. Welfare. Out of which he outlined. Assign work and duties in accordance with their skills and abilities.
Yeah.
If you're very skilled in you know, if you're extremely skilled in music and you're horrible at doing math, for example, I know not everyone's like that, okay? I know not everyone's like that, but I'm just giving an example, yeah. Okay, then please don't force that person as his work, okay? Not learning and practicing, but as his work, please don't force him to do accounts. You will kill the person. They may start writing music notes instead of numbers on your check sheet and balance sheet. Right? I think this is very wise.
Of course, the example is exaggerated. But often, when we come to looking at picking up duties or responsibilities, it's also important if the person are not suitable for certain things, then we may need to reconsider how to help them. So to adjust to a more suitable position or more suitable job scope, or you know, a role that can work on rather than completely out of the picture and make them suffer.
The second thing he mentioned is pay salaries befitting their work at service. If they do a hard work, pay them well. Okay, and then the third thing is provide medical assistance. I think this is where they don't have Medicare in that time and place. Make wholesome food available. Is that why Unibart's potluck always full of good food? Yeah. And lastly, allow for leave and vacation at appropriate times. Oh, this is advice given 2,600 years ago. How many of these things are our bosses doing?
Or maybe when you become a boss, how many of these can we give? Or make sure we comply. Not comply, but able to provide.
Again, I think this is very wise. If you are the worker, you will want this, won't you? That will make you happy, won't it? So again, another source of happiness. And if you are a boss and you're providing this, your workers like you, you are happy too. So, happiness. Happiness. So a lot of these things that I've read on initially were targeted from a layperson's perspective and also accumulating wealth. So not particularly targeted towards just happiness per se. So I'm just adapting a lot of these things. But I still think it's very valid in terms of a layperson's life. But having said all that, just to bear in mind that the Buddha is very clear in his instructions of which kinds of happiness are still the foremost. Because don't forget that irregardless, all that we have achieved through our rightful means in terms of our wealth and material are still subject to causes and conditions, and they will still come and they will also still go. We cannot live forever. Our money also doesn't last forever. Okay, now the next part, letting go. I've said all that and everything is about, you know, your hard work, you earn your things, you own it, so happy. Now let go. Your turn.
Let go, just finish. Letting go is a process, right? It's not something that we can do it straight away. And also letting go, there's different stages, different levels of letting go as well. So it comes back to what how we associate or relate to even the four kinds of happiness. Because if we associate it like Buddha said, ownership is okay. Yes, I'm going to own it. If there's changes to the ownership, how do we respond? How do we react? We only know how we do it when it comes to us. Maybe for now, we can have what if, or yeah, I will do that. If this comes to me, I will do that. Often what happens is when friends face some difficulties, or if I were you, I would do that, I'll do this, like the whole advice is like so long that it's so easy, just do it. But when it comes to us, oh no, what just happened? Why? You know, why it comes to me? Why I feel that way? Why I suffer, or why other people treat me, or why I'm not good enough, or I'm not, you know? So a lot of that come, and we can only face it when this, you can say it's a feeling, so this type of experience come to us. then actually those are the time that we can, it's an opportunity to put our practice into it. So it's not that when this difficulty come to us, that's when we feel like, oh, I'm not good in practice. But did we see that we're thinking about we are not good in practice? Yeah, so when difficulty comes, that's actually, I think I say that to some of you before, if you're feeling suffering, you're on the right track. Because that's when we can work with that. Oh, sorry, we're talking about happiness.
Yeah.
But suffering comes after, if we feel happy about it and cling to it, that's when suffering comes, when things change. And often it's when things change that's when we know how we respond to it. And it usually takes time. So first is probably don't be too maybe impatient about wanting to get rid of that changes. So changes does take, you need times to process in your heart and mind, and then slowly understand it and accept it, and then you'll find a way to let go. So it's different for everyone, the letting go, and it's different when you face with different scenarios or different circumstances.
I often find that when hearing about letting things go, right, I find that myself, I can only speak from my own experience, my own practice, because I think it's everyone interprets it a bit differently, and it depends on where you are on your practice and what you've come across, right? But what I often find is, which is the beauty of the Buddha's teachings on middle path, is I end up in two extremes when I hear let it go. One of them is going to be, I want to let it go. So then I'm actively pushing things away. And then this actually creates more suffering. I don't know if you've ever come across this yourself. It's like, you know, maybe say my laptop broke, for example. It's like all my work and everything is in there, for example. It's not broken anyway. I have backups. But say for example, you know, it's a frustrating process. These things do break down because they're not, it doesn't last forever, you know. And then you try to tell yourself to let it go. But then obviously you're frustrated. There's that strong, the emotion and that sense, the emotion and the feeling of frustration is very strong in there. You know, it comes up because I guess we're still human. We still have these emotions come true. And then you tell yourself to let go, right? And then you're like, why am I still so frustrated? You know, I understand the teachings. I understand the Buddha say, let it go. Now let go, 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 let go. No, still haven't let go. But then in my mind, then it's like, why haven't I let go? It's like, oh, I have to let go the let go to let go. Then it becomes like a huge process. Then you just get, you know, it just spirals. So I often find that this is one of the extremes we go into when we say let it go. That it's like we're trying to actively push things away. What's my other extreme? But I think this is what people encounter more often, because you know, attachments when problems come, you don't like to attach to your problems anyway. Right, so it's more a natural tendency for you to repel, push things away. So in that case, right, oftentimes the problem has already resolved, but the emotion lingers. I don't know if you all felt that before, especially if it's something more significant. Like the problem's already resolved. There is a plan, it's been carried out, it's done. But then 2 days later, you're still like, why is okay, let go, and they still cannot. And then that thing comes again. So then I find that then this extreme, right, is not helpful. Which actually the Buddha is very wise in terms of what he's taught. Once again, there is the bhava tanha and the abhiva tanha, which is the wanting and aversion. And again, the things that I've described really are just in a sense of pushing and pulling. to put it very, very simply, it's once again what your mind is doing. It's pushing and pulling, pushing and pulling. And so I think that's one of the greatest challenges I personally have faced when trying to let go. Like, I think intellectually, conceptually, we all understand what the Buddha is trying to say. And everything that we have said so far, I think conceptually you understand as well. Then, like what Su Xian said, when it comes to you, can you practice it? Or so the concept understanding level and the wisdom level hasn't matched yet. Yeah. And that's why it's a journey. It's not like, yeah, I finished this textbook, done. I passed the test, flying colors. It's not like that. It's your life. It's the way we live. It's the practice itself. Yeah. So I think this is my biggest challenge in letting go, between the aversion and the attachment. If it's a problem, it's not usually attachment. If it's happiness, then usually it is attachment. Yeah? No one attaches to problems, right?
We do, like, attach by keep thinking about it, trying to push it away. That's what we attach to.
Yeah. It's very interesting, isn't it? You attach then to averse.
Yes.
But that's what, I think that's what reality is. You go between them, and then you're hardly still in the middle. Mm. That's why it's the middle path. Not the left path, the right path, the up path, the down path. No, it's middle path. When you walk away today, don't tell people about what up path, down path, left path, right path. It's middle path, okay, people? Middle path. Middle path. So, and it's very clear that the Buddha has said this, like, sensual pleasure or happiness from equanimity. Equanimity, happiness of equanimity is still foremost. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but every now and again when you're actually undisturbed by other people or undisturbed by things, so calming, so calming. It could be whether you're very focused on doing your work and then you completely cannot hear the noise around you, or it could be that you're fully aware of what things are happening, but emotionally you're not shaken, you're just very secure and contented, and that kind of, it's hard to describe, it's a feeling, but that feeling really is so joyous and so calming that I think maybe that's what the Buddha was trying to describe.
But you still need to let it go.
I haven't even gotten to the point that I'm attached. It's just like, wow, 10 seconds gone. All right. That's what I wanted to share in terms of letting go. Any comments, anything you want to say or add, or share your personal sort of experiences that might be helpful?
So do you have any tips to share on how to let go successfully?
I think that question is directed to you.
Why? I've already let go.
Oh, yo!
No, I'm just kidding. Probably depends on what it is. We come across different things in life. Probably one of the things that I can think of for myself is in regards to duty and responsibility. So at times that we play different role, even in a date. We may be a student in the classroom, we may be a teacher to another classroom, right? So we have different roles that we carry throughout the whole day. And we jump from one role to the other. But often the mind doesn't just stop. Okay, I leave this classroom, that's it. But we carry that forward too. And then we carry that to other things that we do throughout the whole day. So one of the letting go that I can see is when we go into another classroom, then we just be in that classroom. So it's more like when we change from one role to the other, we bring our attention to the role that we play at that point in time and the responsibility that come with that. It is challenging when we're doing certain things. We are in the classroom as a student, then the mind will start thinking, oh, the games that I want to play. Oh, wow, my friend is playing outside now, looking at the Facebook. So nice, enjoying their time. Why am I stuck here, right? So that often happen. So it's how soon we notice those thoughts. It's not like have no thoughts at all about it, but when it comes, how do we respond? Do we being agitated? Ooh, why am I thinking of that? Or are we understand and just let it go at that point in time? Probably for some of the committee here, you may be experiencing that when you are doing some of the activities, then those may be weekends, and then some other friends is having some other times at other place. So then you will start to go, why am I not there? Why am I not there? Why am I being here? So then the heart is not being at that present moment. So that's where it's actually a good time for us to look into letting go at that point in time and to be able to experience that moment. If we can't really, like, still stuck in our head, don't be too harsh as well. Just understand it. Because it's true understanding that we are able to let go. Without a clear understanding, it will still come, but probably becoming lesser, less intense and less intense as we go. So when it comes intense, don't worry about that, but keep working on that, keep looking at it. We are not saying we are just a human being, and we still make mistakes. Right? I still make mistakes. I don't know about him, you know, for himself. So we still come across that. So it's okay. But working on the effect becoming lesser and lesser through understanding, not through pushing it away. Yeah. So then from there, it becomes, we gain more clarity, and we becoming enjoying whatever we do, understanding our role at that point in time. And when we are home, we are a daughter or son, then we play that role. And we understand the responsibility that come with it. Then you'll be fine and happy and let go again.
I think also it's about the first step is to recognize that there is conflict, at least within yourself, you know what I mean? Like, because oftentimes when you want to let go, you know there's a bit of going back and forth between craving or aversion and things like that. Then I think really the first step is to recognize that there is that conflict. Yeah, because I don't know if you've had this experience, but sometimes when your mind watches a certain thing, it's almost like that thing knows it's being watched and just stops. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. It just kind of, it's like a little naughty kid just running around, right? Then the moment you look at the kid, then the kid just stops. But I think internally within the mind, maybe it's just that the first step is to recognize that there is a conflict. And I've mentioned this in my previous talk, I think, in Seeking Refuge. And I think this is the beauty of the Four Noble Truths. Which is not the board. But anyways, the Four Noble Truths is, once again, it's there is suffering, there's a cause of suffering, there is an end to suffering, and then there's the path leading to the end of suffering, isn't it? And it's still the first noble truth. There is suffering, okay? It's not just that there is blatant suffering, but in recognizing that there is suffering. And then you know, then the next step is then you can look into the cause of suffering. It's the same formula, yeah. So I think if we're struggling to let go, maybe one of the things really is to recognize that there is this conflict going on, at least internally. And then it may take a bit of time before then you find out that, hang on, what's the cause of this? Maybe it's because something's still not completed yet, not resolved, or what have you. But then don't worry, because there is an end to suffering. And of course you have to practice to get there as well. Yeah. Because I often find that as humans, right, we have emotions, and sometimes the emotional mind and the rational mind don't really go hand in hand together. Like I said, you know, sometimes the rational mind says, yeah, that thing's done, it's resolved. Whatever problem it was, there was a plan, it was carried out, the issue's resolved. But then the emotion still lingers. And then oftentimes we are trying to push away this emotional state, whether it's negative or positive or whatever, most of the time we take note of the negative one because it's more, and then the positive ones is the attachment, but then we don't really see that attachment, which is sometimes even more dangerous because we don't see it. But the negative ones, because it's making you unhappy, so you want to push it away. Yeah. So then recognizing that there is that emotional state, and then no emotion lasts forever. Okay, no emotion lasts forever. Your happiness from feeling satisfied with food lasts, what, minutes to hours. Even your most devastating heartbreak from a breakup, you know, cannot eat and drink for like a few weeks. They're not dead again for another few years. But eventually, you still get over it. That emotional state does not last forever. So I think sometimes it's, you cannot force to let go. It's easier said than done, but I find that if you practice to a certain level in your meditation practice where you can at least still your mind and you recognize that this is an emotional state, you can often sit with it. It's like my own experience with patients is that sick patients always want the doctor to do something. And sometimes there is nothing that can be done. But you see that that patient is going crazy. Why? Because you're the doctor, you have to do something. And I'm like, I can give you painkillers. I can give you Panadol. Do you want one? No. I want you to get rid of my problem. It's like, but I can't. You need time. Say, for example, most common things, your common cold and flu. It's like, you know, some of you who studied medicine or medical science or even, you know, read a bit more about it, you can't really cure viruses. Your body has to overcome it. Sure, there are some things that we can help along, but the bottom line is, you know, you still have to recover on your own. So then oftentimes, then the patients are like, please do something. I'm like, I can give you fluids. And I can drink too. Like, yeah, I know. But that's all I can offer you. So I can give you Panadol. Does it make the virus go away? No, it makes the fever calm down for a little bit. So you're still not treating me. Like, I cannot. It's the truth. You need time. But I illustrate this as an example that sometimes you just have to be comfortable with knowing that position and knowing that you sit with that. I use a patient as an example, but if internally, it could be you and your emotional state. It's okay to be upset. I'll be worried if you're not upset after a breakup. It means that this is, you're not even serious about it. There is something wrong with you. Okay? So it's okay to have that emotional state, but it's also important to know that you can be comfortable to sit with that emotional state, but don't get carried away by it. And sometimes we need time, it may not happen straight away. But part of letting go really is to recognize and then, you know, just these things come and go. They do come and go. Yeah? There are other things that you can work towards. Yeah. Sorry.
I guess when we recognize like conflict within us, yeah, are we supposed to sit still with it or like do something whilst recognizing or like, continue working but also recognize like the conflict within you,
yeah,
or just take a few moments or take a walk or something like that?
I think that's any thoughts?
I think as to some extent, most of us sitting here, you may have some way of dealing with that already. Otherwise, we won't be sitting here, right? So it's depends on what it is, and you work on it at that time. Important is not harming oneself and not harming others. Then it's just internally we take some time to walk through that process. And no expectation on how soon it will be, but just give yourself a bit of patience, a bit of love, just take some time to overcome it. Some cases, some people may gain that understanding just listen to a talk, a Dharma talk, or any other talks that's helpful. Some go for a walk, some drink a big glass of water. So it's different way of doing
water,
that.
Water.
Water, yes. So it comes back to at that point in time, no harming to oneself and others, that's the most important. And you just need to try out different ways to understand it.
And I think it'll vary between everyone, I think. It depends on how you grew up, how you've learned and these sort of things. And also depends on what the situation is. I mean, being frustrated over not winning the lottery versus, getting frustrated over a breakup, for example, it's very different in terms of severity. You know what I mean? Like, who actually wins the lottery, right?
I need to buy one.
Yeah, but then you know what I mean? Like that kind of frustration versus the kind of more... and so it depends. It really also depends, yeah.
Happiness and let it go, probably if we apply that to the Four Noble Truths, right? There is happiness. There is causes of happiness. And the happiness will end. And by following the Eightfold Path, right? We can also use that to help us to cultivate. Understand that there is happiness. And then what causes this happiness? Is that from greed, or is that from understanding, letting go? And understand that this happiness will come to an end as well. And there's a path for us to follow. So there's a different way of looking at it, but both are going through the same path.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because the three Dharma seals, or the three things that as confirms that this is Dharma teaching, is some of you may have heard it. Want to hear?
Three Dharma seal. The three.
Sorry.
Okay.
Impermanent suffering, non-self.
Impermanent suffering and non-self. Yeah.
That's another.
So there is some there is the suffering bit, right? There are some translations that actually put enlightenment. Which is like the flip side of it. You know what I mean? So, suffering, happiness, suffering, or end of suffering, it's two sides of the same coin, really. But the truth is, it's there. You have to recognize it as well. Yeah. Wow, not bad, huh? We've talked for a long time. Any other questions, comments, things you want to share on happiness, letting go, any Dharma or Buddhism related questions? If there's none, then that's fine as well. Don't need to force the questions. Keep thinking. Anyways, most of the things, well, part of the things I've sort of made notes on today was from this book called The Buddha's Teachings on Prosperity. I don't know if the library has it.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to get, whether it's on Book Depository or wherever. I just find that this is a very interesting and also a very light reading. Sometimes if you read the suttas, suttas are great, okay? Fantastic. I'm saying sometimes if you want to read something a bit lighter and also more... Because this book really talks about prosperity, wealth. It's very applicable to a layperson.
At home, at work,
in the world. And there's also a section on dealing with relationships and resolving conflicts. Although I must say that the things that they said what not to do is pretty much don't do this. So we're on the right track. We haven't digressed. Developing an attractive personality. Again, so I think it's worth having a read of this book if you get a chance to.
Are you lending it to us now?
Oh, if you want to.
Yeah. Something more applicable at our stage at the moment. Of course, it's still good to like go through the scripture and sutta. That's still helpful for us to continue to reflect and understand the Dharma. But at the same time, sometimes we may feel, oh, something is too far. Then this one is more applicable to our lay life. And how do we look at most of the lay things that we deal with? But for the mind, it's still important to have Dharma's, like proper Dharma's talks. Not tonight, but proper Dharma talks that is helpful but from other teachers.
It's a scripture sutta class tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sutta maybe.
But don't. But coming back to the basics, right? Don't forget about the story on trying to buy a car with $500. Really, we recognize our position and then just work towards it. Don't. You'll get very frustrated if you've attended one retreat and suddenly you want to be like
run a 7-day retreat.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, or maybe you're super talented. I don't know. But you know, these things they're stepwise approaches. Yeah. So oftentimes it's worthwhile going for talks again and again or attending retreats again and again. Even though conceptually you already know what things are being said. But depending on your state of mind that day, depending on what practices you've already gone through, what life experiences you've gone through, suddenly the teachings may, you know, you may have a whole different understanding to the particular teachings.
You may have already experienced it yourself, like maybe the first time you heard about Four Noble Truths, what comes to your mind and your understanding level. And compared to now, when you reflect on Four Noble Truths again, are there any changes or no changes? You know that for yourself. So it's a continuous journey until we completely understand. And that's the time that maybe you don't even need to let go. I don't know, I'm not there yet.
So I remember earlier on when I was reading a lot of books and trying to learn as much as possible through reading and listening, right? Then I got a bit frustrated because everywhere it says let go, let go, let go, let go. I'm like, how? What? Let go. I let go already. But you know, yes, no, like, is there any other description other than letting go? Like what is let go? Then after going one big round, you know, attending retreats and a bit of life experience and these things, then I've slowly come to accept letting go because I don't think there's any other way to phrase it. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is the same teachings, the same things that's being said, you can have a very, very different level of understanding depending on where you are. So you know, do keep coming back for talks, ideally at Unibuds, but you know, whichever sort of teachers or Buddhist teachings that you feel comfortable with, do continue to practice. And reading is good, but it's also good to clarify with speakers and especially with the monks and nuns when you get the chance. Sometimes we can go on off a little tangent on our own, especially if you read either different translations and the wording's a bit different and you're like, I thought this said that and that said this. And then it's always best to counter-check with someone who's more experienced. Not me, please. But preferably the monastics who have... I mean, think about it. We spend 1-2 minutes, we have 5-10 minutes a day. They spend their career, their life career is practicing Buddhism. I think we can see where the degrees and the degree difference is. Yeah. Okay, I think everyone's getting tired. anything else to add? If not, then yeah, cuckoo.